Great Loop Radio, brought to you by America's Great Loop Cruisers Association. We're dedicated to sharing Great Loop information and inspiration with those actively cruising, planning for, or dreaming about a Great Loop adventure. This is Kim Russo, the director of AGLCA. Today we're going to talk about one of the Great Loop side trips, and this is by a member request. We're going to talk about the Ohio River. My guest is Joe Pica, who is a veteran looper. And before we get officially started and introduce Joe, I'd like to take a moment to thank and recognize our Admiral sponsors who support AGLCA at the highest level. They are Curtis Stokes & Associates, Dog River Marina, Passage Maker Trawler Fest, Skipper Bob Publications, United Yacht Sales of the Carolinas, and Waterway Guide Media. As always, we encourage all of our listeners to support these businesses that support the Great Loop. Without further delay, I'd like to introduce you all to Joe Pica. Joe, why don't you start, if you could, tell everyone a little bit about your cruising background and your loop experience.
Okay, well, I've done three loops, both through Canada and also through the Great Lakes, the American way and the Canadian way. Both were great fun and enjoyable. And aside from that, we've managed to do most of the Western rivers, the entire Mississippi from above Minneapolis all the way to New Orleans, the Ohio River and the associated Ohio Rivers, the Allegheny, the Monongahela, the Great Kanawha River, through Charleston to the New River, and as well as the Cumberland to Nashville and the entire Tennessee River and other rivers. We've done almost 39,000 miles on our boat in 8 years.
And you are still a live aboard, correct?
Transitioning. Yes. We finally bought a little bit of dirt in New Bern, North Carolina. We have a little townhouse that we can turn the key and leave. Because that's closer to the grandchildren.
But, how nice. And your admiral for these thousands of miles is your lovely wife?
Yes. Kathy with a K, and prefers to be known as Punk, so don't ask.
And obviously a lot of cruising chops there because of the distances you've done, but one of your particular favorite parts of the Great Loop and your cruising experience in general has been the rivers. Tell us what it is about the rivers that makes you enjoy cruising them.
The rivers have so much texture to offer, and basically the rivers are the arteries of our history and commerce in the settlement of at least the eastern United States. The U.S. has more navigable waterways than any other country in the world. And because of that, it really is the fabric of our history. And it offers, well, I like to call it great blue-haired touristing, of which I am shamelessly a blue-haired tourist, and it's just a wonderful walk, and the scenery is spectacular as well. So you get all sorts of goodies out of it.
Great. And Joe did present on some of the Great Loop side trips at our last rendezvous. So when I got a request from a member to do a podcast about the Ohio River, I thought of you immediately, Joe, because I know you've done that area. So talk to us a little bit about the Ohio River for some of our listeners maybe who never considered doing a side trip on the Ohio River as part of their overall Great Loop adventure. Kind of give us a little bit of an overview, and then we'll drop down to the real detailed specifics.
Well, the Ohio River flows from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where it's mile zero, to Cairo, Illinois, at mile 981, where the Ohio joins the Mississippi. Loopers will see this area, the lower end, if you want to call it that, of the Ohio. And unfortunately, it's not a pleasant section. Most loopers dislike the rivers because their only experience is from St. Louis to the land between the lakes, which is like a mecca when you get to it. But that little section, that lower 40-some miles of the Ohio River, it's not pleasant. It's a big fleeting area, lots of commerce. There isn't really any accommodations for recreational vessels. You've got the largest backlog of a lock in the entire routes all the way around the country at lock 52 and 53. So it becomes an arduous, something to be endured, something to just get by with. But the difference is, particularly with the Ohio, is that after you get past Paducah and the mouth of the Cumberland River, you come to Springfield Lock and Dam, and once you go through that lock and dam, it's like there's a switch, and the entire character of the river changes from this commercial lack of resources, the hustle and the bustle and all, to this bucolic, wonderful scene, rolling hills, and then it becomes just a real experience. So it is a long cruise. To go to Pittsburgh, 981 miles, or if you want to say 920 from where you normally be, you want to devote an entire season to that. It's just not just a short jaunt off the course of your loop. But conveniently, the land between the lakes has some absolutely wonderful marinas, a number of which are available to loopers at a very low cost, particularly to winter a boat over. So it's a moderate climate. And it's a great place if you have, we were full-time liveaboard, so we couldn't do this. But if you are not, and you have dirt dwellings or a place that you can go off during the off-cruising season, or if you just continue down and go backwards, you can do the Ohio River justice. It's an entire season summer cruise, 2,000 plus miles if you include the side rivers, which I highly recommend. And you can stage a boat either at Land Between the Lakes. In particular, we left St. Petersburg, where we had wintered over in April, and went backwards across the Gulf and up the Tenton, which is very simple to do. There's not a tremendous amount of current. The current falls off the further up the river you go. The caveat to that is, as long as it isn't flooding. And since it's a controlled waterway with 13 locks and dams, you don't really enjoy the current except at the very bottom where the black water and the Mobile come in as being adverse to you. So you just watch your hydrological survey data sheets and websites telling you when there's going to be a flood crest coming down. You wait in convenient locations for it to go by, and then you continue and peck your way north. And same thing with the Ohio. If it's not at flood stage, it's very benign. We would only see a max of about a knot of current on the Ohio when we did our trip, and that was only at the base of the dam. Once you got locked up into the impoundment or the lake, as if you want to call it that, there was no current. So it was very, very manageable in that respect.
Jen? Okay. Joe, if you would kind of start us where most loopers turn off the Ohio and miss the rest of it. Start us from there and just kind of walk us through what ports of call will come along and some of the highlights of marinas and anchorages and things like that along the way.
Well, port of calls are absolutely too numerous to mention. There's probably well over 160 towns on the Ohio River. The Ohio River, after you leave Paducah, if you want to stage that, or if you come down out of Green Turtle onto Angela Towhead, the very first town you're going to hit would be Golconda. And that is a marina. It does have diesel fuel, and you can get off the river, but it also has a great anchorage right opposite of it. And anchorages on the rivers are where you find them and make of them. As far as guides on the river, there are really only a couple, and they're very, very meager in the sense of not offering a lot of accuracy for current cruisers. Probably the most accurate would be your Active Captain website, to go to that, because it's cruiser-sponsored, and crowdsourced. And I populated all the places we went, but oddly enough, I thought we were going to be anchoring a lot, because looking at Rhodes' information on it and Quimby's and all, you have to really verify all these places. All the rivers are dynamic. They're very dynamic in the sense that things change. You get a flood, marinas are gone. After the flood, marinas either come back or they don't. So it's important unless you're in a real safe harbor, it's important to verify where and if there's still a marina there, and Quimby's is probably the best source right now. You call them ahead and make sure that they still exist, that still they have fuel, that still the conditions that you can get in there if you're a deep draft vessel. Same thing with anchorages. When you look for anchorages, you say, okay, and maybe you've got a posting of a certain depths, certain contours of the bottom, but to understand the rivers are fluid, they shoals come and go and change. The bottom line is you don't have to be super resourceful to find anchorages, but you've got to be kind of aware of the fact that what may have been deep water last year was not deep water this year. Maybe it was shoal last year, not shoal this year, but actually deeper water as far as protection. There are a lot of tows on the river. There are smaller tows than on the lower Mississippi. The average one on the Ohio is 15 barges, which would be a 3x5, 3 wide, 5 long. And that's usually because the locked chambers that you'll be going through confine the length of the tows. Some are long, some are short. So that's another factor. But they're very easy to deal with. The river is generally broad, well-marked, easily negotiable. In many cases, you just pull over to the side of the river out of the main channel and anchor. And it's that simple. The currents will keep you in line with where you're going to be, so you don't have to worry about swinging with the current. Unless the wind really grabs you, you might swing some. But and the rivers are wide enough, and if you just select a place on the inside of the bend, away from the outside of the bend where the natural contour of the channel will be and the marked channel, you have protection from a point or a quasi point. And if you anchor where the upbound tows can see you for a long ways, they're negotiating the outside of the bend, plus they can see you on the inside, you're going to be well protected and well visible. And you, of course, you always call up the first tow, which you'll see, and, hey, Captain, I'm going to pull your craft over here. Would you mind, am I out of your way? Oh, yeah, no problem, Sonny. They have to want you to get you there, kind of a reply. So you're comfortable with that. That being said, we intended to have to anchor out a lot. What we found was our anchoring, we only anchored twice in over 2,000 miles because most of these towns, villages, and cities along the Ohio River offer free dockage in the heart of the town, right where you want to be. Marinas, if you need to stay at them, are dirt cheap, most of the time a dollar a foot or less, all inclusive. For example, and when I say towns, villages, and cities, one of the attractions are that you're day hopping at our crawler speed from place to place, point to point that you want to visit anyhow. And it would be very easy to work our way all the way up, but let me cut, for brevity's sake, to your major rivers, major river cities. First one you're going to hit is Louisville, Kentucky. And Louisville, Kentucky offers two sets of floating concrete docks with water and power for free for transiting boats. You simply call them up, say, oh, enjoy your visit to Louisville, hang up, and that's it. Boy, it doesn't get too much better than that. And then
no, it doesn't, does it?
No, and you've got choices with rental cars and some public transportation, but we always grabbed an Enterprise rental car and enjoyed getting to places such as Churchill Downs and some other locations to really enjoy and see what you want to see at a major venue like that. Then the next big city you come to is Cincinnati. I'm sure you know what the Cincinnati is with Ted Staley there. But and that's a great place to visit. These are cities I've never been to before. And it has a serpentine wall, and we tied up right to the serpentine wall. You're self-sufficient. You don't have water or power, but most of us are self-sufficient. There are marinas, but they're not right in the heart of the city where we want it to be. So we enjoyed the Serpentine Wall for over a week and had a great visit to Cincinnati. Of course, Pittsburgh is the the crown jewel of the river. And Pittsburgh is sitting right at mile zero, and the point, which is formed by the two rivers that feed and make the Ohio, that is the Monongahela and the Allegheny Rivers. Well, the whole point is a big park and has a wall that you can moor to for free, as well as the whole wall at Heinz Field, which is Old Three River Stadium. That's all moorable. The wall in front of the convention center you could tie up to. There isn't power or water, but it's free. And if you want to go to a marina, for example, you have right across from the point on the Monongahela at a mile two or one, is a little place called Station Square, which is a renovated former transportation hub and has all sorts of trendy shops and restaurants and eateries in it. And it has a marina there. And they offer $25 a night dockage, all-inclusive. That includes your water and your power. And they only charge you, at least when we were there, four nights out of the seven because they're not there for the other three nights, so they can't offer you any services. Not that they do a whole bunch for you, but, you know, it's kind of odd. I mean, you can, so it really, it's very, very inexpensive, and you're right there at the transportation hub at the base of the incline railways, the funiculars that go up Mount Washington, where you can overlook the city. It's just gorgeous views. And you can walk right across the bridge that you're at and be in the heart of downtown Pittsburgh. And you also have the public transportation, the buses there that you can take and the subway system. And if you have a red, white, blue card, you're on Medicare, senior citizen, you show that in the transportation, in the core city, transportation is free. So what a great place to visit. And Pittsburgh blew us away. I haven't been there in years. It's like a crystal palace when you come around with the BG complex and all. It's just gorgeous. And tons of things to do. Museums, arts, you name it, as well as tours of an iron smelter, the Cary furnace. Go to a working coal mine and take a coal mine tour that shows you all about mining, and these are the characters that built that area. Just great visits, and you can also get a rental car there, which we did, and you're conveniently in place to go and go to Falling Water, Kentuck Knob, two of the good examples of Frank Lloyd Wright's architectural qualities. Just amazing visits. But those kind of venues just offer so much texture and enjoyment, and these are major cities. Plus, you're really on the Lewis and Clark Trail, and it's the same river that Lewis and Clark floated down, but, you know, it's got locks and dams now, but it's the same countryside and the same views that they saw, which is kind of fun. And, of course, every one of these venues has so much to offer from its history, dating all the way back to the traders and the French and the Indians that were there along that valley. Of course, you get into the history of the Northwest Territories, which I always thought was Seattle, Washington, and Oregon. But no, that was Illinois, Ohio, Indiana was considered the Northwest Territories. So it's just a wonderful, wonderfully rich experience to cruise this river.
Sounds like certainly a very economical cruise, but also with lots of highlights and plenty to see and do. We do need to take a quick break to hear from one of our sponsors, but when we come back, Joe, to let you know, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. You talked about some of those big cities, and I know there literally are over 100 smaller towns, but I'm going to ask you to name just a few maybe of your favorite of the smaller towns when we come back. Back in a minute.
AGLCA Admiral sponsored Dog River Marina is located at the mouth of the Tenton Waterway in Mobile, Alabama, only 22 miles from the Gulf of Mexico. The marina encompasses 95 slips, 80 of which are sheltered. They offer a ship store, courtesy car, rental cars, 24-hour guard service, and shore power. The complex's full-service repair facility is staffed with highly trained personnel to handle everything from simple repairs to complex overhauls. For more information, visit www.dogriver.com.
Okay, Joe, I've given you about 30 seconds to think about it. So
tell us,
if you can, of all of those small towns, give us a few of the highlights for you.
I'm going to say Madison, Indiana, is a wonderful, charming town. Played a little in Marietta. Also, Parkersburg, Point Pleasant, Portsmouth, Gallipolis, Wheeling, West
Virginia.
Tell
us a couple of the reasons that make some of those some of your highlights.
Well, let's pick on Point Pleasant is the mouth of the not the Monongahela, but the Great Kanawha River that leads all the way up in, to meet the New River, which comes out of North Carolina in the Appalachians. And it's not very long of a river, and it goes right through Charleston, West Virginia. Charleston has a wonderful levee wall, and you can visit the capital of West Virginia. It's only 90-some miles up there, so that's not a bad run. Gallipolis is charming waterfront parks. That was about it. It was just very, very, very Norman Rockwell-ish. Portsmouth, Wheeling, West Virginia. Wheeling has played a lot in history. It has a wonderful venue right at the waterfront where you dock for free again and enjoy all the histories of Wheeling, West Virginia and the Robley Bridge, which is right there. Marietta. Marietta featured very, very high in the history of the Northwest Territory Settlement and Compact, and has a ton of history and a steamboat, the last steam tow operating on the Ohio River at that place where the Muskegon River comes into the Ohio. So you've got these very, very rich experiential places to go see. And the history in the heyday of the Ohio, with all through the mining era and the timbering and the fur trades, all of that is very, very prominent in that along the river. And every one of these little birds played a large part in all that history, and they have their own little niche museums. One particular funny little one was Rising Sun. Rising Sun was fun because it has the world's ugliest statue I've ever seen in the world found. And it's a big point of controversy in the town, but it was made for great fun. But it also has a harp factory. What the heck is a harp factory? I go in there and they're actually making harps. And they offer a tour, and they actually make little succinct miniature harps called harpsicles. Kind of a fun thing. And those kinds of little items become very, very fun things. Another one was a saddle tree factory. Now, a saddle tree factory was in Metz. I don't know what a saddle tree is. I never knew what a saddle tree is. So we went to the factory museum. A saddle tree is basically the wooden form on which they stretch leather over to make saddles for horses.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I know. And it was one of these little niche museums, and the fact that Lanier was there, the Lanier Mansion, and he bailed out Indiana's, the whole state back in the back time. So they're just all these little niche museums. So, you know, that makes it a very, very enriching, knowledge-wise, lots of eye candy. These are high hills. You're going through, like when you get on the Monongahela, I'll take it all the way to the end. If you choose to do the side rivers, which we did out of Pittsburgh, that's a little over 200 miles, and you actually end up at the highest place in North America. It's not... No offense to Skipper Bob, Balsam Lake up on the Trent Severn. It's actually in Wheeling, and past at the end of the Monongahela. In Fairmont, West Virginia, you're at 867 feet elevation above sea level. And Lake Balsam is only 840.
So it's the highest navigable water North America?
Yeah, the highest place you can get to by boat from sea in North America.
Okay. Interesting.
That's
good to know also.
It's kind of fun. But it's also seeing, you know, there's all sorts of Americana as you go through here. Everything from beautiful woolen forested hills to soft mountains, I call them, of the Appalachians. You're going in to the Monongahela through the Appalachian Mountains when you're on the Great Kanawha, and also on the Great Kanawha, not in addition to the Monongahela. It's just great fun. Lots of visuals, big, huge power plants in some cases, which are startling to see. It's just amazing.
So it sounds like, Joe, that it sounds like this is a great route for people to take, especially if they are history buffs or are just looking for some nice rolling hills kind of scenery. So kind of bottom line in terms of if you're planning this trip, no worries about dockage or marinas because they are plentiful, correct?
Yes.
And best source for current information, you mentioned Active Captain, and you mentioned Quimby's as well. Any other sources that you would point people to for current information?
Yeah, PittsburghBoating.com is a good site for the upper portion of the river. And it's a very active billboard and forum up there about what's going on the upper end of the river. You won't experience a lot of trawler type boats on the river. Most of the river is run by smaller boats, houseboats, those kinds of things. And one particularly charming class of boats towards the upper end are they call them pull stacks. They're paddle wheelers, true paddle wheelers that people have either built themselves or restored. And they have all these rendezvous, and they're just incredible to experience and see and tour. And they're great folks. Just a character of the upper river with all the paddle wheelers. But yeah,
I'm sorry, just a quick question. Any restrictions or any maximum size of a looper boat that you would suggest going through, or if they can get through the canals and things like that, then they'd be fine on the rivers?
Oh, this is a big commercial artery. I mean, you're talking
right.
Tons of traffic on this river from tows. Matter of fact, locks 52, 53 and combined, that's why they're building the Olmsted to replace them. Transits,
okay.
And this comes from the core, transits tonnage second only to the Panama Canal in North America. So to give an idea
wow, interesting.
How much is going on up and down the river.
Mm-hmm.
So
no problem for looper boats all the way to Pittsburgh.
No, not at all, because those are big. Yeah, it's a well-maintained, well-marked channel because it's such a commercial channel.
Okay. We are just about out of time. I want to once again thank Joe Pica for joining us and sharing his extensive knowledge of the Western Rivers. If you are looking for more information on the Great Loop, you can visit our website, which is greatloop.org. Until next week, we are signing off. Thanks, Joe. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Joe. Jim? Hello? Jim?